Your order of service says we're going to sing now, but we actually had a good experience singing the America the Beautiful towards the end of the service after the sermon. So that's what we're going to do in this one too. I'm going to say a few words of introduction to my own thoughts, but also to Kayla Williams as we enter into this shared sermon. Returning from Northern Virginia and the Washington, D.C. area after many years away has brought back to me some indelible images of the two most memorable visits that I made to the National Mall. And they were both associated with the war in Vietnam. My first visit to the mall was to protest the war during the large demonstrations in October of 1969. And, you know, a very powerful emotional experience to be part of that kind of huge protest. But it was actually the second time that I visited the mall in 1985 that was even more memorable and more emotionally complicated. Because that was the time I came to see the Vietnam Memorial. Now, I'm sure that many of us here have had the experience of visiting that memorial and descending into and almost, you feel like, under that sea of names of those killed during the war's formal duration. But it is not that experience that I want to share today. It is important on Veterans Day not to confuse the reasons that we have a Veterans Day with the reasons that we have a Memorial Day. And it is an easy thing to do, especially if you're somebody like me who has a dual nationality or history with another Western country. I grew up in Canada. And of course, Canada, Britain, honors the war dead on November 11th, the day that the First World War ended. And of course, I'm wearing my poppy today, which is the way that Canadians and Brits recognize that day, November 11th, the references to the poppies in Flanders Field in the First World War. But this day and weekend is different for us here in America. We have set aside Memorial Day in May as a time, a unique time, to remember those who died and who gave, to use the words of Abraham Lincoln from the Gettysburg Address, the last full measure of devotion to their country. Our Veterans Day in this country remembers and honors those who serve, and not only times and service roles that involved war, but also those who have served, those who continue to serve in all of the branches of military service in whatever time and whatever role. Veterans Day asks us, and here I will use Abraham Lincoln's words again in a little different way, asks us the living to be dedicated to the great task remaining before us, which is to offer the last full measure of national devotion to those who have served through all of the stages of their lives. From its earliest days, the Vietnam War Memorial has been attended to, has been witnessed, has been supported, and has been augmented by living veterans. So when you enter that memorial, their presence calls us to remember that we cannot and should not collectively remember any war without also remembering those who served in it, those who came back from it, and the lives that continue to this day to be influenced by it. I recall that after its initial dedication, the Vietnam War Memorial was criticized for being too abstract. And I think that that was a criticism, an honest criticism, that represented a desire to remember not only the dead, but the living as real people, and not just as a list of names. So there were additions that were made to that memorial that embody and remember in a different way. Two of them, additional lifelike statues, were added after 1984, the first representing soldiers who served, from three different branches, I believe, and the second because the initial statue included only male soldiers, a statue representing the women who served. And then a final addition has been a plaque remembering all of those whose lives were changed and eventually, and who were veterans after the war ended, came back, but eventually lost their lives due to injury or illness resulting from the war. In their own way, these statues and the plaque expands that memorial to be more inclusive of the living. And it reaches across the gap between the names of the dead and the living veterans who are so often nearby when you visit. At this time when our country is struggling with what memorials to war mean to us, especially wars that no longer have living veterans to tell their stories, we will inevitably have conflicts about whose stories will be told as history, and whether we can ever have just one history that the whole country honors and recognizes, rather than multiple histories. I'll say today my own preference is that Civil War memorials might focus on the anonymous soldiers who fought on both sides, and not so much on the leaders. You know, in all wars, there are so many different reasons why people have found themselves serving. Before we had an all-volunteer army as we do now, there were some that were serving really against their will. Today, our military has patriots who have felt the call of duty and volunteered to serve, but they also serve alongside those who came forward to serve because they felt they had no choice in their lives, because of economic circumstances, limited choices. We can honor everyone's service without distorting or forgetting the complexity of why people serve, and we can recognize that their service still matters. And of course, within all of the branches of military service, so much of it today does not have to do directly with war. Now, I am a person who is personally not a pacifist, who believes that there aren't circumstances which can ever justify using military force in war. But I also today recognize that beyond defense, we support a military that serves the interests of public safety, law enforcement, disaster relief, higher education, governance, diplomacy, and scientific research. So on this Veterans Day weekend, let us honor with a whole heart not only our veterans of military service that have served in the past, but also those who continue to serve today and the families and friends who support them. And let us honor even more wholeheartedly the needs of our veterans. They deserve the last full measure of our country's devotion. I am grateful and proud that a member of our congregation, Kayla Williams, who is both a veteran and a person who professionally serves the needs of veterans, who is both a parent in our congregation and a volunteer in our congregation, has agreed to be a shared sermon speaker with me today. Kayla is a linguist and a former intelligence specialist in the United States Army who wrote her experiences of the 2003 Iraq invasion in her book, Love My Rifle More Than You. And some of you will remember Kayla doing a sermon here in 2015 based on those experiences. Even though our gestures of honor are important today, hearing and listening to the voices of veterans about their feelings and their needs on this weekend is even more important. So I welcome Kayla Williams.
Reverend Wayne, for that generous introduction. I'm really honored to be included today. So when my first book was coming out, I had to engage with my publisher in Manhattan. They had me come meet with them in person, and I got the distinct impression that they wanted to be sure I could string two coherent sentences together. I had a bachelor's degree in English literature and had learned Arabic in the Army, but still they all seemed befuddled. If I had any brains, why would I join the Army? It defied their understanding in Manhattan of how the world worked. This was when I started to really get what has come to be called the civil-military divide, the gap between those who go to war for our country and the rest of its citizens. You may not know this, my publisher certainly did not, but today's military is fairly representative of the nation, except in terms of gender. The South is disproportionately represented, but the ethnic makeup of the military generally reflects that of society. And contrary to stubbornly lingering perceptions, the poor do not make up the bulk of our armed forces today. They may not qualify to enlist. Only about 25% of today's young people meet accession standards. The rest are unable to serve because they are too overweight, lack a high school diploma, cannot pass the entrance exam, or have a criminal record. While only about 85% of American adults overall have graduated from high school, over 98% of service members have. The military is not the career of last resort anymore, and for many, it no longer represents a viable way to climb the socioeconomic ladder. And yet, stigma remains. There is this odd duality to it. It sometimes seems that we revere troops and pity veterans. Collective guilt over the fact that less than 1% of the population is volunteering to carry the burden of our nation's wars, perhaps, leads us to put uniformed personnel on a pedestal. The military is the most trusted institution in America. And in a somewhat strange twist, even some staunch liberals have now pinned their hopes for saving our republic on the generals. Americans cheer for troops at sporting events, let them board airplanes first, and even sometimes give up their first-class seats on planes to them. Once we take off the uniform, things become a bit more muddled. On Veterans Day, of course, there's a great deal of public adulation, parades and speeches and recognition. The rest of the year, though, it often seems that profound respect is tinged with pity. If you only read the headlines, you might assume that as a woman veteran, I must have been sexually assaulted in the military and am now unemployed, homeless, and suicidal. Those are the stories that I see most often about veterans, especially women, focused entirely on the challenges we may face. As an advocate, I struggle with how to tell the nuanced and complex full story. Yes, statistically speaking, we do face higher rates of homelessness, and our suicide rate has been climbing faster than that of other segments of society. At the same time, the gap in unemployment rates has been completely eliminated, and women veterans in particular are more highly educated, employed, and paid than our civilian peers. We are less likely to be on food stamps, have no insurance, have no income, or live in poverty. For people of color as well, military service is associated with better outcomes on many measures. Veterans are also more likely to vote, volunteer, and participate in civic organizations than non-veterans. We come back to our communities and strengthen them. Yet that story of success has not seeped into public consciousness. Instead, research shows people associate photographs of homeless individuals with the word veteran. So here we are, in a situation where most Americans are not close to anyone who has served recently, carrying a muddled mental image of what a veteran is, once a hero perhaps, but now broken. And thus, when bumping up against a real live veteran, many Americans resort to a pair of platitudes. Thank you for your service. I can't imagine what it was like. The first can elicit a variety of emotions in veterans. Personally, I hate being thanked for my service. My passive-aggressive way of coping is to thank TSA agents for their service. They, too, are on the front lines of trying to protect Americans, aren't they? What a thankless job, getting yelled at by people who have managed to live since 9/11 without knowing they can't bring a full-size bottle of shampoo on a plane. Teachers serve, too, as do firefighters and police officers and Peace Corps volunteers and park rangers. It makes me uncomfortable to be lauded above all those for doing a job I volunteered to do and for which I have been very well compensated. As for the second, I have had a major shift in thinking about it. When I first got back from Iraq, I vigorously agreed with the sentiment, you can't imagine what it's like. You're right, I thought, you can't. If you weren't there, you can't imagine war. A brilliant essay in the New York Times by National Book Award winner Phil Klei woke me up. It's nonsense. He more politely called it a failure of imagination, and that's exactly right. If you can imagine and empathize with sentient robots in WALL-E, being 12 years a slave, the struggles of Roman gladiators, and fighting blue aliens on a distant planet, then surely you can imagine what it was like for me, your fellow citizen, to go to war during your lifetime on the other side of this earth. When civilians say this, it distances you from those who fight on your behalf. When veterans accept it, we increase that distance. That distancing is harming our society, our democracy, and our veterans. It is this distance that allows those on opposite sides of an issue to use troops and veterans as props in debates. "Don't kneel during the anthem, it disrespects the troops," some cry. And yet my Facebook feed is filled with veterans saying, "Whoa, wait, I went to war to defend the right of free speech, not to be used to squash it." Now, I'm not saying all veterans feel that way, far from it. We are a diverse group of your fellow citizens with varying viewpoints, a reality that is obscured when we are turned into voiceless symbols that can be interchangeably thanked for our service without knowing any of the details of it. It is this distance that allows for a stifling of necessary debate about when and where and how we go to war under the false assertion that supporting the troops means blindly supporting any use of them and allowing vast, unaudited sums to flow through the Defense Department while other agencies see their funding of needed services slashed. And it is this distance that forces veterans to bear the burden of war alone. Americans voted for the politicians who sent us to war. You share in the moral responsibility for everything done in your name with your tax dollars. But too often, veterans are shouldering alone the weight of what we did and what we saw. In some indigenous cultures, returning warriors tell their stories, share their losses and victories with the community, and communalize those experiences. The community sent them to war and must hear what that entailed, must collectively take up the aftermath. When our citizens refuse to imagine what our veterans have gone through, they are abdicating their share of accountability, leaving us to carry it alone. That isolation, I believe, increases the psychological and spiritual distress of those coming home. So I challenge each of you on Veterans Day, but throughout the year, to ask, listen, and imagine. Be open to what this may bring. Colin Kaepernick chose to protest police brutality by kneeling during the national anthem rather than remaining seated after talking with Army veteran Nate Boyer about his experiences. Do not let symbols or memorials be used to justify the ongoing oppression of our fellow citizens while closing off veterans' voices. Rather, let our stories of service and sacrifice, boredom and bravery, suffering and success inspire you to recommit to serving our nation's highest ideals. Bridge the distance and bear the burden of war together with us in community. Thank you.